Welcome to the extraordinary world of James Nixon, a much-travelled Australian, a commercial pilot, a photographer and an international journalist.
Blood has been running cold through the veins of millions of aircraft travellers and every single airline pilot following the crash landing at London's Heathrow Airport when Senior First Officer John Coward sliced through the broken cloud at 1,400 feet, normally 90 seconds from touchdown. The visibility at Heathrow at the time was in excess of 10 kilometres, with the stiff breeze from the left, 40 degrees off the centre line. Nothing too challenging. Just before 1 p.m, the late winter temperature was 11 degrees, 2 degrees above the dew point, meaning that the formation of fog was impossible. The flight from China required three pilots to assure some in-flight rest, so as well as the handling pilot in the right seat and Captain Peter Burkle in the left, another first officer, Connor McGuinness, was sitting between and just behind the two operating pilots. What happened can only be speculated upon, and believe me, anyone whose job is flying two-engine airliners has been speculating like stockbrokers during a mining boom. David Learmonth, safety editor of the 100-year-old aviation magazine Flight International, says that it's a remarkable accident. He's never seen anything like it in his long career. That's saying something. By the time the BA777 emerged from the grey London overcast, the crew were unaware that it was already in trouble. It's thought that throughout the long flight from China, the rear waste container from the economy toilets had filled, moving the aircraft's centre of gravity rearward. At 600 feet, 2 miles and less than a minute from touchdown, the autothrottle commanded a power increase to balance the increased drags from the flaps and landing gear so that the plane could fly at a lower speed for landing. Nothing happened. The pilot disconnected the autothrust and applied power manually, to no avail. Trading height to maintain airspeed, witnesses say it was bucking nose up and down, a sign that it was probably approaching stalling speed. The trick is to hit the ground while the wing is still flying, for when it stalls, the plane becomes as aerodynamic as a piano falling from a skyscraper. The rearward centre of gravity would have made the plane less balanced than optimum, so with no power at his fingertips, the pilot would have had to be more aggressive to avoid the stall. Many times a second, he'd have to have understood the handling characteristics and adapt his flying style accordingly. He had 35 seconds until impact. Bystanders say that it was making a loud noise, probably a trick of the ear because it was so much lower than normal. The captain told a rescuer he lost power, though we don't know if it means electrical power or engine power. None of the air traffic controller voice tapes have been released, and the black boxes, which are actually orange, have been removed for decoding. One will provide the last hour's radio transmissions and anything set off mic on the flight deck and the cabin announcements. The quick access and flight data recorders will provide a huge amount of data from anywhere up to the last month, so that a complete animation can soon be available showing the plane from behind, above and side on, as well as every instrument, switch and control position in real time. We also know that on touchdown there was so little energy left from the 300 km/h approach and the designed separation of the landing gear that the whole mess slid only 300 metres. The possible causes can be put down to these: fuel starvation, double engine failure, massive computer failure affecting the engines, or terrorism. Fuel starvation, flaming out both engines due to bad fuel management, is highly unlikely. Brussels and Amsterdam plus 100 other airports would have been on track, so even if a much larger than expected headwind had plagued the crew, they would have chosen to land and take on more fuel, performing what we call a technical stop. Fuel starvation due to a leaking tank or emergency jettison valve opening by mistake is not impossible, but to lose so much fuel without knowing or doing something is. Fuel starvation due to well-placed rocket holes in the wing tanks falls into the realm of fiction. But the fact that the left main gear punched straight up through the wing, probably through the fuel tank, without catching fire, leads to speculation that there was little fuel to burn, although the investigators reported that there was fuel on the ground at the crash site. Double engine failure due to bird ingestion is a possibility, although it'd have to be pretty big birds, probably geese or something bigger, since the engines are tested to survive chooks being fired into them by cannon. The pilots have not reported bird strikes, and the sight of birds whizzing by your windows at 300 km/h grabs your attention, and we would have heard by now if that had been the case. It appears that some type of computer failure caused the engines to fail to deliver power as requested. The investigator's preliminary report states that the aircraft failed to respond to automatic and pilot requests for more power. But what caused it? Maybe a new terrorist trick that can turn off the electronics of the world's most highly developed, robust aeroplane engine, either from something on the ground or by a suicide terrorist in the aeroplane. One possibility doing the rounds is the automatic electronic jamming system used by the Prime Minister's motorcade. Gordon Brown was on a British 747 bound for China less than a kilometre away. Maybe his car was driving on the perimeter road underneath the jet at the time. Most leaders' cars have very high-tech jamming systems which can turn off phones and transmitters used to trigger bombs as they go by. In fact, ex-Lebanese PM Rafik Hariri's system was so well developed, in 2005 his assassins had to resort to sitting a suicide bomber in the van laden with explosives and using an old-fashioned plunger like something out of the Klondike Gold Rush to set the thing off. As the investigators piece together the puzzle of the highly successful 777's first disaster, Boeing and all their customers will be looking on with interest. In 1994, the first ever computer-designed airliner was delivered out of its hangar with a previously unheard-of 3 hours extended-range twin operations approval. This means it can fly across the sea, have an engine failure, then rely on the good engine to fly for 3 hours to bring it to the safety of an airport, all due to increased redundancy of the systems, demonstrated quality of its engines, and upgraded maintenance program. This is an ultra-reliable, new-generation aeroplane that has learned from all that have gone before. Any challenge to its performance reliability is a huge barrier to its success and the airlines who rely on it to cross the Atlantic and Pacific with a monotonous regularity. As with all successful crashes like this one, luck played a part. With one runway used for landings and the other for takeoffs at the world's busiest international airport, there wasn't a fully laden jumbo sitting at the holding point where the wreck slid to a stop. Had it occurred at an airport like Gatwick, the result would have been a catastrophe. And how the struggling pilot managed to bend the laws of physics to make it over the perimeter road is enough to send some men to the bar for a stiff one and others to the altar. But take note, 48 hours into the investigation and the airline and the manufacturer have not grounded their other 777s. A sign that someone knows something we don't.
Thank you very much, James, and we look forward with much anticipation to our next touchdown with James Nixon. It's bound to be interesting.